From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast to Coast AM as we get your week rolling. Of course, we were on Sunday night after our Halloween bash over the Saturday-Friday weekend. Enjoyed ourselves. Here's what's happening. A story we have been talking about for a couple of years now may sadly be coming true. If a giant solar flare hits the planet, it would knock out the entire power grid. If an EMP attack by some rogue nation, a nuke, is detonated high atop our atmosphere, the power grid goes out. This is not good news. The Washington Post is now reporting that the electromagnetic pulse, or EMP, created by these events could wipe out electricity for months on end, creating a global catastrophe. Duh. We said that 2 years ago. The White House has released its national space strategy. And according to the Houston Chronicle, the multi-agency plan details how the U.S. will prepare for and deal with a massive EMP from space weather. They really don't go into a rogue nation detonating a nuke, but that's just as bad. As you know, William Forstchen, with his book, One Second After, and F. Michael Maloof, A Nation Forsaken, on this program, we have continually talked about the dangers of an EMP from the sun or a nuke attack. It's got to be fixed. Next hour, I'll be talking with a guest about this. They have a documentary out on this very important subject. And more importantly, in a month or so, we're going to still keep pushing this possibility of getting our grid fixed and insulated. We've got some experts on. We may have a U.S. senator on the program who may jump on board and try to get this done. But for the first time, finally, we are seeing something being done at a national level just to create awareness to a story we've been talking about for a couple of years. This, my friends, is a nation saver. It's got to be done. The Russian airline has now blamed external influence for Saturday's Sinai plane crash, which sadly killed 224 people. A senior airline official said the only reasonable explanation is that it was due to external influence. An investigation by aviation experts using data from the aircraft's black boxes has yet to give its full conclusions. But as I've been talking with James Sanders about, author of The Downing of TWA Flight 800, planes just don't disintegrate high in the air. They either blow up or they're shot down. And James, it looks like when they talk about an external influence, that's exactly what they're talking about, huh?
Right. It could be either a bomb or a missile. But the thing that attracted me or put me over on the missile side as a theory was that immediately they were saying it was at cruising altitude of 31,000 feet, and yet it only lifted off 16 minutes earlier. Every seat was filled, full crew, full fuel tanks. They don't climb. Commercial flights don't climb like jet fighters. So it wasn't anywhere near 31,000 feet. Was it too high for a missile? I don't know yet. But it seems to be almost impossible for it to be legitimately be anything other than a bomb or a missile.
When are they going to say, hey, this plane was only about 14,000 feet, and that missile possibility then, Jim, really becomes a possibility?
I don't know. Once you get some bad stuff out there, they tend to not want to tell the truth about a lie that exposes them to all kinds of bad press coverage. Look at TWA Flight 800 and look at Malaysian Air 370 when good information seemed to come out early, and then they spent all this time basically trying to figure out how to come up with a better lie. So I think they might be stuck with 31,000 feet. We'll see.
Okay, Jim, I knew we were going to have you back, but I didn't know this quickly. But they came out with an explanation that backs up what you and I have been talking about.
Right.
Jim Sanders. The Chicago man with a concealed carry license who shot and killed an attempted robber will likely not face charges. I would hope not. Police were in the process of completing their investigation. A masked man walked into a store and currency exchange on Saturday night on the city's southwest side. He displayed a handgun. He announced a robbery to an employee, and then the gunman pointed his weapon at another employee and forced her to the back of the store. The armed customer then shot and killed the man, and he had a right to do that. John Lott, of course, author of More Guns, Less Crime, and a number of other works. Well, finally, we see concealed weaponry working, even in Chicago, John.
Right. Well, I mean, there are relatively few people in Illinois that have permits just because it
costs
like $500 to get a permit there to go through the process. But every day you see these types of stories. And but they get local news coverage. This is one of those rare cases that that get national coverage. But even earlier this year, there were mass public shootings that had been stopped in Chicago by people with concealed handgun permits. There was a case just a few months ago where an Uber driver had just dropped off a passenger in downtown Chicago, and someone on the sidewalk there was starting to attack people to shoot them. And the Uber driver got out and wounded the attacker there. The state attorney said that there's no doubt in his mind that multiple lives were saved. But that only got local news coverage, and it's just an example of the types of cases that usually just get local coverage.
And, you know, and the verbiage here, will likely not face charges. How could they even consider charges against the guy?
Right. Well, Chicago, Chicago. you know, if you looked at the AP stories that came out after with regard to this case, they were quoting the local spokesperson for the police department, just, you know, warning people that they really shouldn't be caring. And but even in the AP story was saying, well, you know, people do sometimes use guns defensively, but it's rare, and they were only able to get cases, a couple cases from September. On our website at crimeresearch.org, you can find lots of cases, even just from October. I mean, I can find probably 25 cases from October where concealed carry permit holders in different places around the country have saved lives, have stopped violent crimes. And, I mean, that's, you know, it's unfortunate that the AP tried to minimize these things, but, you know, the proof is in the articles there.
All right, John, thanks so much. John Lott, of course, will get back for some more lengthy stories. He's an incredible author. Thousands of pounds of ground beef shipped nationwide are being recalled by the All-American Meats Company due to potential contamination with E. coli bacteria. Here we go again. About 167,000 pounds of ground beef products are affected by this recall. The list is way too long to read it. If you want to go online and search for the story, it just has to do with ground beef and E. coli. The story will pop up all over the place, but apparently this was shipped all over the country. And as you know, 43 restaurants by Chipotle have been shut down as well over E. coli scares there. A Dallas mother is accused of forcing her 4-year-old son to ingest ant poison after telling her 3 children that she planned to kill them and herself. Well, she's been charged with attempted capital murder. The 4-year-old child being treated at a hospital. He's improving a little bit. He was critical over the weekend. Police in Philadelphia, in a suburb there, launched a food tampering investigation after receiving multiple reports of needles in children's Halloween candy. We used to worry about that when I was a kid. It looks like it's coming back again. Our resident psychiatrist, Peter Bregan, author of Guilt, Shame, and Anxiety. Peter, why could people be that sick? How could they be that sick to put needles in candy?
Well, George, the good news is that it's practically an urban myth, or really is an urban myth. There's no recorded children in recent times who have been injured in any serious way by anything in candy. You go back many, many years, one father poisoned and killed one of his children, reminiscent of the earlier report you gave about a woman poisoning one of her children. And then he masqueraded it by putting it in the candy. But in fact, people can really enjoy their Halloween. The biggest dangers on Halloween are going to be overeating candy and then all those kids out on the streets. When these things happen, they're often involving domestic violence. That's why it was so interesting that you paired it with the mother poisoning her child. There's only been one reported case, even, of a man who systematically put needles back in 2000 into some candy, and he was convicted, and I can't find out a thing.
I just hope they put these people away for a long time, Peter. They're just sick individuals. Peter, thank you for everything you do for us. I'm looking forward to talking with you as we go into the holiday season as well. A grandfather fighting for his life after he contracted a flesh-eating superbug, which will require him to have at least 20 operations to treat. Oh, my. 56 years old. He was visiting his mother in Australia nearly 3 weeks ago when he fell ill. Doctors are concerned that this fatal infection could be contagious and said preventative antibiotics should be taken to those in close contact with an infected patient. Gosh, that's scary. Up next, let's talk a little bit about chicken soup for the soul, dreams, and premonitions, and we'll get your take on all of this. Kelly Sullivan Walden joins me, a certified clinical hypnotherapist, next on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast. Kelly Sullivan Walden with us, as I mentioned, clinical hypnotherapist, inspirational speaker, founder of the Dream Life Coach Training, and she studied with Carl Jung, she studied Carlos Castaneda, she has studied all of the masters, and she's on Coast to Coast. Welcome back, Kelly. How are you?
I'm so good and so happy to be back with you, George.
Time to dream, everybody, right?
Yes, it is.
Are people dreaming? Are you getting feedback from people that they're all beginning to dream very strange things these days?
I think dreams have always been strange, and I think it's strange to not have a strange dream. However, it does seem that I'm the one that hears the really strange ones because I'm kind of a magnet for them, and I also see the transformational value in them, so I consider myself kind of a dream alchemist. So are they dreaming any stranger than they have been before? In my experience, I think we could say that the ante has been raised with the season that we're in, this mm-hmm. being a season that many consider to be a time when the veil between worlds is extremely thin, perhaps transparent, and perhaps there's no veil at all right now. So because of this particular time of year, and we could say added to all the other things that are going on in the world, a lot of people are having pretty intense dreams, and the most memorable kind of dreams are the scarier ones. So yeah, they are kind of strange.
And they're pretty intuitive these days too, aren't they?
I was flooded in putting this last book together. I already, in my history, I've always been a magnet for the kinds of dreams that are really life-changing, and I had a few that I used to carry around with me because they were amazing, but in the last few months in putting this book together, Amy Newmark said, and she's the publisher of Chicken Soup for the Soul, that normally they get 1,000, maybe 2,000 submissions for each of the Chicken Soup for the Soul books. And this one, we got over 5,000 submissions.
Wow.
Of stories that of dreams that were premonitory and just premonition stories about things that were just from ordinary people that had never necessarily had that kind of experience, but they were huge. So we could say it's a bit of a zeitgeist, it's a sign of the times that those who are paying attention, this is a good time for you to look for those signs. And it's an incredibly empowering time as well, even though there's a backdrop of all kinds of things that are very disempowering. It's empowering to know that there's a way out of the mess, and your own higher wisdom or your angels, whoever you think it is that's guiding your dreams, is speaking very loudly and giving you guidance that you're not going to hear on CNN.
The fact that this is beginning to happen to people, what does that tell you? What is going on? I mean, is there something out there in the ether of dreams that we need to be aware of?
Well, if I think about it and I get very cosmic about it, I think that it's kind of like the universal wake-up call, because things aren't working the way they are right now, and technology, as wonderful as it is, and I'm grateful for it because it allows me to talk to you right now and connect with people who are
sure.
listening from,
as long as the power grid stays intact.
that's true. However, most of us, because we've relied on technology, the external kind, so much as a crutch, we've forgotten about how truly powerful we really are in ways that are beyond this external communication device. So many, I think a lot of these dreams are pointing people back to what is most natural, what's most authentic, and what some people, the primitive people on the planet, have happening in spades, because they're not electronically kind of, you know, screwed up. They actually can hear the voice of their higher guidance, and they're able to listen to it. I think that these dreams are calling us all to listen to that voice that is the still small voice that I think is carrying a bullhorn these days. And if we listen to it, I think we'd be much, much better off. And I can give you some examples from the book that recently came in, if you're open to
me. Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Well, let me see. There's so many good ones. there's one from Kathleen Canavis, who I know that you've had on your show.
Uh-huh.
She was given a clean bill of health after having her mammogram. And she continued, however, to have recurring dreams of a monk, a Franciscan monk, that showed up in her dreams pointing at her breast, which is strange by itself.
Mm-hmm.
But the communication that was transmitted was, there's something wrong, and you've got to get this checked out. And so she kept going back to the doctor, and everything was fine, more mammograms, and everything was fine, until this monk persisted and said, you've got cancer. And long story short, she was able to get exploratory surgery that was able to reveal that in fact she did have stage 3 cancer that was undetected by the technology.
Oh boy.
As advanced as it wasn't advanced enough to see what was really happening with her. And because of her dream, her internal technology, she got a mastectomy. And she's alive and thriving now. And if you saw her right now, you'd think she's never had a bad day in her life. And she's the picture of health. And she's an incredible cancer survivor because of this dream. And then there's stories that tell the reverse, where people have been diagnosed with cancer and their dreams tell them how to cure it and how to do some very irrational things that actually do bring them back to health.
I had last night a dream, and I woke up and I kept saying, what an amazing dream, except I can't remember what it was. So I'm saying to myself, George, how do you have this feeling of euphoria that was a great dream, that you may have learned something about this or had a problem solved in your dream state, but you can't remember the dream, except you do know that you did dream?
Yes.
Now, what's going on with that?
Well, first of all, I think it's wonderful that at least you carried with you into your waking reality the feeling sense of the dream. That's something. Even if you didn't recall all the elements and all the details.
Yeah, I don't remember the details at all.
But you did remember the feeling.
Yeah.
In many ways, we could say that the feeling and the energy of the dream is the most important piece of the dream. And if you could carry that feeling from the dream time into your waking reality, then in many ways you've bridged the gap, and you've been able to carry that into this, and now you're able to share it with me, and you're sharing it with your listeners. So there's a positive energy that does carry. And so if you don't, even for those who don't remember any dream at all, or even an energy from a dream, pay attention to the first thought that you have upon awakening. Or if there's a song in your head, if there's a lyric, write that down. Don't discard anything that you wake up with, because often it is intelligent. There is something happening. And it is frustrating, I know, when there's a very positive dream and you know that you got the answers to some big universal question, and or at least the lottery or something.
I'm just hoping whatever it was, it solved the question, the problem, whatever it was.
Exactly. I think we benefit from our dreams, even if we don't remember them. However, when you do remember something, even if it's a feeling tone, it does, I think it raises the bar of how much we're able to benefit from our dreams.
Kelly's website, KellySullivanWalden.com, linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. She's got a number of books out there. I would suggest you just go to her website and look at them. One includes Chicken Soup for the Soul, Dreams and Premonitions. And premonition dreams, those that give us those precognitive events,
yes,
they are amazing, Kelly. I want to talk about those when we come back. Take some stories from people who might want you to interpret a dream or two. I've got to ask you about that perennial, you're running, but you're not going anywhere in a dream. What's that all about? And remember what people talk about, that if you fall in your dream, like off a cliff or something, that if you don't wake up, you're dead. Well, that makes a lot of sense. I want to get your take on that as well. Kelly Sullivan Walden with us this hour only. We'll take calls next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Kelly Sullivan Walden with us as we talk dreams. Kelly, so the dream of running and running and running, your legs are just spinning and you're not going anywhere. What does that mean?
Well, from a metaphysical perspective, we could say that you're wanting to advance in your life. It's part of our soul's design to advance and to go places and to explore freedom as much as possible. And yet, so our souls are infinite, and yet our bodies are finite, and many of us struggle knowing in some level that we're more than this flesh bag, and yet we have this wonderful body that we have to be in. And I think many people that have this dream feel somehow stuck. They can't necessarily manifest or move things as quickly as they like. And there's other perspectives on this as well, but I think one is that you're having to grapple with being in the dimension of density and making the best of being a soul in a body.
What about the falling dream?
I think falling dreams are fascinating, and I know I don't necessarily believe that if you fall, you die, because I know many people, like myself included, that I've fallen many times in my dreams, and I know many people that haven't. I think we're still alive to tell the tale. I think I'm alive, unless you and I are doing this in the afterlife somewhere, so let me know. But I believe that they can be, on a very simple level, an indication that we're overwhelmed, that we're overworked, that we're over our heads, that we've lost control, or we're afraid of losing control, or something may have happened in life where we feel that the rug has been pulled out from underneath us and we've lost our footing. That's the most basic perspective. The other perspective that I really love is that there are falling spirits that are calling us to them. And these falling dreams are helping us to drop deeper into our roots so that we can find a sense of deep stability, so that we're not just so at the whim of all the crazy things going on in this world. So we can be peaceful even while be heavenly when all hell is breaking loose.
It just is amazing at how the dream state has so much influence over what we do, who we are, who we meet, jobs that we pursue. I mean, it's just an incredible tool, isn't it?
It's amazing, and how much of our lives are ruled by dreams, and even the technology that we're using. So many of the inventors dreamt the things that made it possible to bring their inventions into life. The filament in the light bulb,
Edison or Tesla? And, all of them. But Edison came up with the light bulb.
Yes, and then even Elias Howe, who invented
Bell, was the telephone.
Yes, that was the telephone. Right, exactly. Bell was the telephone. Yeah. But Elias Howe invented the sewing needle because of a dream, and we would be very Amish dressing we'd be naked if it wasn't for the sewing needle, and that even started the Industrial Revolution. So without dreams, we would be naked and in the dark and probably shivering and very cold. So we have a lot to be very respectful and grateful for our dreams. And the dream that you have tonight, if you remember it or even remember a piece of it, could be the dream that changes everything. Mm-hmm. Could change life on Earth as we know it. So don't take them lying down.
Well, let's go to the phones. They're lining up for you. Bob in Chicago. Bob, welcome to the program. Go ahead.
Thank you, George. Thank you, Kelly. Kelly, I keep having the same dream over and over. I mean, it's a different dream at times, but it's about this one person that I could not have a relationship with. What are the chances of this same person dreaming about me?
Oh, I love your question. In fact, this is a synchronicity. I just flipped the book to a page where there's a story about that in our Chicken Soup for the Soul Dreams and Premonitions book, about a woman who met a man when she was in her early 20s. He was a doctor in Sweden. They had a brief tryst, but he was married. They couldn't be together. And 20 years later, she had already been married and had kids, and her husband passed away. And there she is dreaming about this doctor that she had known from many, many years ago that she'd never gotten a chance to really have a relationship with. And these dreams are vivid, and they're happening all the time. And then she has a dream that she's climbing up a mountain, and she can see through the mountain, and she sees the man. And basically, she picks up the phone, and she decides to call him. Turns out he's still working at the same hospital in Sweden. Turns out he had been dreaming about her as well, and his wife had come through and given him the message and given her a message in a previous dream that it was okay to move on. And now they've been married for, I don't know, 10 years now. So you never know. If you have a strong feeling about somebody and you're dreaming about them, we are psychically connected. And if you love someone, that there's a power in that. And I can't say for sure that she's dreaming about you, but I say that there's a very good chance that she is, or that she should be. And there's something very fulfilling on the level of the dream, because the dream is a parallel reality unto itself. It's not just a dream. So on some level, you are getting some fulfillment and satisfaction, I hope.
I had a call a couple of years ago, Kelly, from a guy who said he was at the airport, but he had dreamt of a woman. And he's at the airport, and he sees her coming down the terminal. Mm. And he went, oh, my God, it's her. And he goes up to her. And she looks at him and goes, oh, my God, it's you. They both had dreamed of each other. Isn't that amazing?
Oh, that's incredible. This happens, and it's such an affirmation that our dreams are revealing what we really need. So if we're hungry for love, we really want that. We can really look no further. We don't have to place our power outside of ourselves. We can pay attention to our dreams, and they can help us to find love. There was another story about this couple, kind of a Harry met Sally couple. They were just friends, but the woman had a dream that she was dancing in a red dress in a ballroom and spinning and twirling with this man. They had a falling out. They hadn't spoken for over a year, but in the dream they were very connected, and this was a romantic energy that she had never experienced before. She called him, which I always suggest people do. If you have a vivid dream about somebody, reach out and let them know that they've been in your dream. So it turns out, he said, before she even told him what the dream was, he said, were we dancing? Were you wearing a red dress? And she was like, oh, what? How could you know that? And they were living across the country from each other. They got together, and they are a very happy couple because this dream led them to each other, this tandem dream that led them to one another.
Let's go to Orlando, Florida. Hello, Edward. Good morning to you. Go ahead.
Yes, I had a really strange dream one time that I came into work, and there was a strange guy I'd never seen before who I was supposed to be relieving. I work as a security guard. And turns out I wasn't even supposed to work that day. And then while I'm talking to my coworker, a guy comes in to make a delivery, and then he pulls out a gun and does a holdup to the facility.
Jeez.
Now, I go into the back, and I pull out my phone to call the police, and something happens where he hears it, and he comes in and he shoots me. I remember looking at myself. I had died. In the dream, I had actually died, and I see it continuing on. He's moving forward, and someone else comes out of a room, pulls out their concealed weapon, and kills him. I remember seeing him over his body and telling him off, and then, like, just a time lapse, and just I saw, you know, things decaying and everything, and then I woke up.
Was there any confirmation? Was there any real life component to this, or was this simply purely the dream?
It seemed to just be a dream, but I woke up pretty, I don't know. I didn't wake up. I woke up calm.
Ah. Well, this is interesting because you never know when it's going to be a precognitive dream unless or until something actually happens in your waking reality. But more often than not, our dreams are symbolic. And a dream of some intruder that is kind of disguising himself, and then he ends up creating havoc. If it were my dream, I would ask, well, what kind of intrusive thought have I allowed in? Whose negative belief did I buy into and allow into what was working? And work can often be about your work, but it can also be about what's working about you. And so I would take it as a sign to be very attentive to what I've allowed in, what imposters, what thoughts that aren't necessarily my thoughts that I may have taken in because I'm open to the people around me, so that you can identify that and release it. I'd say that every dream is a good dream, even a scary nightmare like this. It's a positive dream because it's letting us know where there may be a place where you're out of balance or that you've allowed in some negativity that you don't want circulating throughout your mind.
We have always talked, Kelly, of the possibility that in your dream state, your dearly departed loved ones can visit you. How do they use the dreams to do that?
Well, from my brief near-death experience, if I could say it, NDE, I remember how difficult it was for me to communicate with my loved ones that I was desperately trying to communicate with because I wanted them to not be scared if I didn't come back. And I came out of that experience with a lot of insights, one of the insights being, wow, our departed loved ones, or those that are trying to communicate from the other side of the veil, have to work really hard to get our attention when we're awake, because our ego reality, our logical mind, is so thick, it's dense, and it's hard to get our attention. It's hard to break through the veil. But when we're sleeping, the veil becomes thin, kind of like this natural time of year when the veil is thin. So dreaming right now is a really good time. We're kind of a captive audience. We don't have that same ego filter that says, oh, that wasn't a ghost. That was just a shadow of something. Or, well, it couldn't have been grandma, really, because I was just looking at her picture, so I might have conjured it myself. So we're more susceptible. We're more open to all kinds of things. In particularly, we're open to visitations that can help to heal our hearts if we're really hurting because somebody is upped and died on us, or is sick and leaving the body. It can be the most reassuring thing that can give us, if we allow it, the sense that life is truly eternal. And as my dear friend Danion Brinkley says, and I know you've had him on your show.
Oh, yeah. One of our buddies is going to be on pretty soon on Veterans Day.
Oh, of course he is. Oh, he's the best. But I love that he says, you know, from his perspective, having died so many times, death is a crock. We keep living. There's just different forms of life. And life doesn't stop being life. It just changes form, kind of like ice and steam and water. It's like it's all related to the same H2O, just different forms. So I think these dreams of our departed loved ones can be unbelievably healing and reassuring, so that we can be fearless as we live, hopefully as close to fearless, wisely fearless as possible.
Okay, let's go to Tony in Tennessee. Happens to be east of the Rockies, of course. Tony, you're on with Kelly Sullivan. Go ahead.
Hi. It's a great honor to be on your show. I've tried several times.
Oh, thank you, sir.
And tonight is the most perfect night in the world to be here. Kelly,
hi,
good night to you. I've had two or three dreams. Some I believe they have to do with my father who committed suicide. It has to do with the dark man, and actually I've seen him waking. When I go to sleep and I have these dreams, I normally wake up and I cannot breathe. I mean, actually, I have to gasp for breath once I get through with these dreams. I try to enter a room. I try the light switch. I manage to get the door open partial because there's something pushing against it, stopping me from getting into the room. And as I manage to get my hand in the door, I try to turn the light switch on. And as I do, there's no lights that come on, and I finally get in the room. I feel this presence, and it's ominous. But behind me, there's another presence, which I feel. I'm part Cherokee, and I've been told this by two or three people who are Cherokee, that that because of my spirit, I have a guardian angel.
Mm.
Now, the second dream that I have is one where I'm on a train, and the train is dark, and there's only two people on this train, me and one other individual in a hat.
Mm.
And they're sitting in a seat, and I look at them, and I stand up, and I say, "Who are you?" And they turn around, and they start to walk away, and I follow them, and I follow them, and I follow them throughout the train, and I finally get to one session where I could, and it's the same as the room with the light switch. Can I get in there and turn the light switch on and see who it is? And it always, all I see is the dark shadow of an individual, like the dark man. I know that you've heard that described many times, the dark man.
Yep, shadow man, those kind of people.
Shadow man or dark man or Charlie or whoever or whatever. And I'm sitting here going, you know, is this a good versus evil dream? It's normally when I have conflicts in my life or I'm trying to decide something or if I'm thinking about the moment when my father died. And that was rather stressful because of the circumstances in which it happened. I was 15. My father tied a string to a shotgun, and we wandered throughout. We lived on like a farm. So, you know, we wandered around looking for him that night in the dark near Christmas. It was on December the 30th.
Oh, my goodness.
And so, and I opened the door. So I believe that may be part of the dream.
Well, let's get a little reaction. We're almost out of time here, Tony. So let's, Kelly, I want you to react to some of what Tony just said.
Wow, I've got a lot to react about. Tony, thank you so much for sharing your dream and its complexity and about your dad. And I can't even imagine what that must be like, must have been like for you. But one thing I know is that from hearing so many thousands of dreams of people who had departed loved ones that took their own lives, often it's the difference between the human version of them and the spirit version of them is almost unrecognizable. The spirit version of most of these people, not in all cases for sure, but in most of these cases, is much more liberated and much more peaceful, and they do want to make contact, although sometimes making contact isn't as easy as we think.
No.
In my opinion, my feeling, and I wouldn't dare assume you know better than I, but I would say it feels like it's your father trying to get your attention, working on, in his own way from the other side to try to get your attention, to let you know that he's, I mean, the story isn't over yet. He hasn't gotten to completely express himself to you, and it may be what he's working through. But I have a sense that the train is a message that things are moving and that things are not static and that things are on track and they're moving in a direction that's probably a good one. Often the dark man, the shadow in the dream, is a part of our own power that we haven't owned. And opening the door, that might be something you're just not ready for yet. And ultimately, if we were going to work together, and if you can, even just tonight, imagine before you go to sleep how you would finish that dream if you could, in a way that left you feeling good and empowered. If you could,
that is indeed the secret. Kelly, thanks for being on the program. Truly enlightening. Can't wait to go to sleep later. Up next, G. Edward Griffin joins us. We're going to be talking with him about a number of subjects, including, of course, the power grid, the Federal Reserve, and so much more.